وقال الملأ من قومه الذين كفروا وكذبوا بلقاء الآخرة وأترفناهم في الحياة الدنيا ما هذا إلا بشر مثلكم يأكل مما تأكلون منه ويشرب مما تشربون.
The notables among his people who had refused to believe and who denied the meeting of the hereafter, and those whom we had endowed with ease and comfort in this life, cried out, "This is no other than a mortal like yourselves, who eats what you eat and drinks what you drink." The notables among his people who had refused to believe and who denied the meeting of the hereafter, and those whom we had endowed with ease and comfort in this life.
This characterization of the opponents is significant. The ringleaders opposing the Prophet, peace be upon him, were those who held the leadership of their people. The error into which all of them had fallen was their denial of life after death. Hence, they had no notion of being accountable or answerable to God. This, in turn, was because of their excessive infatuation with worldly life and their refusal to believe in any value above material well-being. The fact that at the time they enjoyed a considerable degree of prosperity totally swamped them in this erroneous belief. They were so deeply engrossed in worldliness that they considered themselves to be right merely because they thrived materially. They were, thus, in no mood to accept that their beliefs, morality, and way of life, which they had thought to be the main cause of their success in this world, could be mistaken. Human history has repeatedly provided evidence of the fact that the opponents of the truth have always held these three features in common. Little wonder, then, that the same scenario obtained in Mecca at the time when the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, embarked on his reform movement.
وَلَئِنْ أَطَعْتُمْ بَشَرًا مِثْلَكُمْ إِنَّكُمْ إِذَا لَخَاسِرُونَ.
If you were to obey a human being like yourselves, you will certainly be losers. If you were to obey a human being like yourselves, you will certainly be losers.
Some people have misunderstood this verse to mean that the unbelievers made such statements to one another in their private conversations. The fact is, however, that such things were said by the notables of society to the common people. The notables had begun to sense the danger that the commoners might be swayed by the distinctly noble character and appealing discourse of the Prophet, peace be upon him. They considered this possibility a serious threat to their vested interests, to their positions of power, to their privileges and leadership. It was this realization which prompted them to resort to the vicious propaganda campaign of the kind mentioned earlier, a propaganda deliberately aimed at misleading people. This represents another aspect of the attitude mentioned earlier with regard to the notables among Noah's people, who hurled similar accusations at him. See verse 24 above. The notables virtually said all his claims to be God's messenger on the part of Hud were merely designed to hoodwink people. All that he was really motivated by was a lust for power. They also claimed that he was in no way different from other people. After all, they said, he too was made of the same flesh and bone as they were. So what justification was there for his wanting to have a position higher than that of anyone else? What was the rationale behind the requirement that others should obey him? The underlying assumption of their argument, one which these notables took for granted, was that as far as they were concerned, their position of leadership was not open to question. They enjoyed an incontestable status, and hence no one could raise any question about their authority on the grounds that they were, like everyone else, made of the same flesh and bone. What agitated them was the emerging authority of the Prophet's leadership, which seemed to pose a threat to their position. In sum, their arguments were no different from those marshaled by the notables of Noah's community. They too resorted to charging their prophet with a hunger for power in total disregard of the fact that they themselves had not only fully satisfied that hunger, but had stuffed themselves with power well beyond the limit of satiety and were prone to indigestion.
أَيَعِدُكُمْ أَنَّكُمْ إِذَا مِتُّمْ وَكُنْتُمْ تُرَابًا وَعِظَامًا أَنَّكُمْ مُخْرَجُونَ.
Does he promise you that when you are dead and are reduced to dust and bones, you will be brought forth to life?
هيهات هيهات لما توعدون.
Far-fetched, utterly far-fetched is what you are being promised.
إن هي إلا حياتنا الدنيا نموت ونحيا وما نحن بمبعوثين.
There is no other life than the life of the world. We shall live here, and here shall we die, and we are not going to be raised again.
إن هو إلا رجل افترى على الله كذبا وما نحن له بمؤمنين.
This man has forged a mere lie in the name of Allah, and we shall never believe what he says. This man has forged a mere lie in the name of Allah.
These words once again clearly indicate that these people, i.e. the Ad, like others before them, did not deny the existence of God. Their main error lay in their succumbing to polytheism. The Quran speaks of this fault on several occasions. See Al-Araf 770, Hud 11:53-4, Fusilat 41:14, Al-Ahqaf 46:21-2.
قال رب انصرني بما كذبون.
The messenger said, My Lord, come to my help at their accusing me of lying.
قال عما قليل ليصبحن نادمين.
He answered, A short while and they shall be repenting.
فأخذتهم الصيحة بالحق فجعلناهم غثاء فبعدا للقوم الظالمين.
Then a mighty blast quite justly overtook them, and we reduced them to a rubble. So away with the wrongdoing folk. Then a mighty blast quite justly overtook them, and we reduced them to a rubble.
The word used here is ghutha, which denotes the rubble which accompanies the flood and which accumulates and lies rotting on the coast once the water recedes.
ثُمَّ أَنْشَأْنَا مِنْ بَعْدِهِمْ قُرُونًا آخَرِينَ.
Then, after them, we brought forth other generations.
مَا تَسْبِقُ مِنْ أُمَّةٍ أَجَلَهَا وَمَا يَسْتَأْخِرُونَ.
No nation can outstrip its term, nor can it put it back.
ثُمَّ أَرْسَلْنَا رُسُلَنَا تَتْرَى كُلَّمَا جَاءَ أُمَّةً رَسُولُهَا كَذَّبُوهُ فَأَتْبَعْنَا بَعْضَهُمْ بَعْضًا وَجَعَلْنَاهُمْ أَحَادِيثَ فَبُعْدًا لِقَوْمٍ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ.
Then we sent our messengers in succession. Whenever a messenger came to his people, they rejected him, calling him a liar. Thereupon, we made each people to follow the other to its doom, reducing them to mere tales of the past. So away be the people who refuse to believe. Then we sent our messengers in succession. Whenever a messenger came to his people, they rejected him, calling him a liar. Thereupon, we made each people to follow the other to its doom, reducing them to mere tales of the past. So away be the people who refuse to believe.
Or to put it differently, they refuse to accept the teachings of the messengers.
ثُمَّ أَرْسَلْنَا مُوسَى وَأَخَاهُ هَارُونَ بِآيَاتِنَا وَسُلْطَانٍ مُبِينٍ.
Then we sent Moses and his brother Aaron, peace be upon them, with our signs and a clear authority. Then we sent Moses and his brother Aaron, peace be upon them, with our signs and a clear authority.
The expression clear authority, which follows the word signs, signifies that the signs which had been bestowed upon Moses were sufficient to prove that he indeed was a messenger who had been raised by God. It is also possible that the word signs here refers to all Moses' other miracles, peace be upon him, that were witnessed in Egypt with the exception of the miracle of the rod. As for clear authority, this refers to that miracle, i.e. of the rod. Such an expression is understandable because after this miracle, it became clear beyond all doubt that the two brothers, Moses and Aaron, had surely been designated by God.
إِلَى فِرْعَوْنَ وَمَلَئِهِ فَاسْتَكْبَرُوا وَكَانُوا قَوْمًا عَالِينَ
To Pharaoh and to his chiefs, but they behaved superliciously, and they were haughty. To Pharaoh and to his chiefs, but they behaved superliciously, and they were haughty.
The words used here, وَكَانُوا قَوْمًا عَالِينَ, mean two things. One is that they were arrogant, iniquitous, and oppressive. And the other, that they were extremely vain and boastful.
فَقَالُوا أَنُؤْمِنُ لِبَشَرَيْنِ مِثْلِنَا وَقَوْمُهُمَا لَنَا عَابِدُونَ
They said, shall we put faith in two mortals like ourselves when their people are slaves to us? They said, shall we put faith in two mortals like ourselves?
For an explanation, see note 26 above.
When their people are slaves to us?
In this part of the verse, the word which is used to characterize the people in question is abid. In Arabic usage, to accept someone as an object of unquestioned obedience and to worship him are almost synonymous. So whoever unreservedly obeys and serves someone appears as though he worships him. This sheds significant light on the connotation of the term ibadah, worship. It also highlights the full significance of the teaching of the prophets to people, that they should shun the ibadah of any other than God, and to bind themselves to the ibadah of the one true God alone. This also clearly indicates that ibadah, as conceived by the prophets, did not merely consist of consecrating the rituals of worship for God alone. Instead, the prophets also wanted people to become fully devoted to God alone, devoted to Him in worship as well as servitude. It is in this pervasive sense of ibadah that they denied the appropriateness of the ibadah of anyone other than the one true God.
فَكَذَّبُوهُمَا فَكَانُوا مِنَ الْمُهْلَكِينَ
So they rejected them, calling them liars, and they too eventually became of those that were destroyed. So they rejected them, calling them liars, and they too eventually became of those that were destroyed.
For a more elaborate narration of the story of Moses and Pharaoh, see Al-Baqarah 2:49-50, Al-Araf 7:103-36, Yunus 10:75-92, Hud 11:96-9, Bani Israel 17:101-4, and Taha 20:9-80.
وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا مُوسَى الْكِتَابَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَهْتَدُونَ
And we gave Moses, peace be upon him, the book, that people might be guided by it.
وَجَعَلْنَا ابْنَ مَرْيَمَ وَأُمَّهُ آيَةً وَآوَيْنَاهُمَا إِلَى رَبْوَةٍ ذَاتِ قَرَارٍ وَمَعِينٍ
And we made Mary's son and his mother a sign, and we gave them refuge on a lofty ground, a peaceful site with springs flowing in it. And we made Mary's son and his mother a sign.
What is said here is not that the son of Mary was a sign of God and that another of his signs was Mary herself, nor is it being said that Mary and the son of Mary were two signs of God. What is rather said here is that the two of them taken together constitute a sign of God. In other words, what is clearly suggested is, that is, the extraordinary manner of Jesus' birth, peace be upon him, who was born without a father, and the extraordinary way in which Mary conceived him without contact with any male, which combined to make them both a sign of God. All those who, while believing in the Quran, deny the immaculate birth of Jesus, peace be upon him, i.e. his birth without a father, would be hard put to explain the Quranic contention that the mother and the son were a sign of God. Two other points seem to merit attention. First, that this account of Jesus, peace be upon him, and his venerable mother betrays another weakness of those steeped in ignorance. The prophets who had been mentioned earlier were rejected on the grounds that they were mere human beings, and human beings could not be prophets. By contrast, the followers of Jesus, peace be upon him, and Mary developed an exaggerated sense of devotion to them, so much so that they ended up elevating them from their human status to one of Godhead. Second, there were also others who refused to believe in Jesus, peace be upon him, even after they had witnessed his miraculous birth and his ability to speak from his cradle. They even went to the extent of calumniating Mary. No wonder God inflicted a severe punishment on them, which became an example for all time to come.
And we gave them refuge on a lofty ground, a peaceful site with springs flowing in it.
This place has variously been identified by scholars as Damascus, Ramallah, Jerusalem, and Egypt. According to Christian traditions, Mary had to leave home twice after the birth of Jesus, peace be upon him, in order to protect him from harm. First, she took him to Egypt during the reign of Herod and stayed there until Herod died. Then, in the days of Archelaus, she took Jesus, peace be upon him, to Nazareth in Galilee. Matthew 2:13-23. It can hardly be stated with any reasonable degree of certitude which place is alluded to by the Quran here. The word Rabwa literally means an elevated piece of land, which has an even surface and stands out in the surrounding area as a result of its height. Now, since this place is described as Dhat Qarar, endowed with sedentariness, the place must be one where all necessities of life are found in abundance, such that it is possible for people to live there comfortably. As for the word Ma'in, it signifies flowing water or a running stream.